Black Black Origin Fresh. We out of Oakland. Step me out of.
My name is Tom Chick. We're listening to the Movie Podcast. This week, we're going to have a raucous opening to discuss our viewing of Prince of Persia, which in my notes I misspelled as, this is awesome, you guys will like it. In my notes, there's a typo and it says Rinse of Persia, which Jake Gyllenhaal could have used, a little hair rinse. He's looking a little greasy. We're going to spoil it. If you have not seen Prince of Persia, I just want you to know that...
he was trying to look Arabic.
Oh, I'm going to edit
racist.
So I'm going to edit that out. That, by the way, before we get to that person, we have with us today Christian McClansky, I think. Christian McClansky.
That's very close, Tom. It's good. It's pronounced Alanis, like LAN party.
Did you enjoy that Alanis Morissette song at the end? Did you stick around for that?
I remained for that.
I remained to see, did they really get Alanis Morissette for their song at the end? And yes, they did. We also have with us today Kelly Wand. Kelly Wand, for our Prince of Persia podcast, do you have a tagline?
Yeah, I have a Persian proverb.
Awesome.
Look at the colander telling the pierced serving spoon, you have three holes.
That's good. Where did you get that, Kelly Wand?
Some website. I have other ones.
From Beauty and the Beast, I think.
You have to guess what it means. You have to guess the English translation.
It means never give up.
No. Good enough.
Kelly Wand, can we get, please, a synopsis of what events transpired over the nearly two-hour running time of Prince of Persia? Can you
put that? You can get that from me.
Please, Ron.
Okay, so this beggar kid, Dustin Diamond, saves this other kid from getting killed by the king's horses. Then he leads the guards on this chase across the rooftops, resulting in dozens of injuries and destroyed property. And the king, impressed by the boy's insolence and the damage he caused, adopts him as his son. And neither of his real sons find this. So the kid grows up and they invade this other city. And Dustin uses his jump powers to start a fire at an intersection. And that wins the battle, even though it doesn't kill anybody. And the king gives the conquered princess to Dustin. But she's a spitfire, so they don't rape her. So she has this thing called the MacGuffin of Time that lets you go back in time when the plot calls for it, but it only works if you use this special sand that's incubated between the princess's right lush orange boobs. And the king dies mysteriously, so Dustin proclaims his innocence by running away with the princess. And the uncle turns out to be evil because his hands were, which no one at the court noticed. And there's some chasing and sand and chasing, and then everyone dies and comes back to life. It's magic. And they fall.
Good. Well done. Well done, Kelly Wand. I see you were following the events very closely. Good.
A sluggard claims the wisdom of 40 viziers.
You missed a banana peel, though. I wish you would have worked a banana peel in
All right, let's go around the room.
Let's go around the room, starting with you, Tom.
Okay, I was going to ask, was this better or worse than Robin Hood? Because I think that's really a tough question to answer. And I'm going to go with that's really a tough one. You know,
you don't even want to say it, do you?
I don't.
I heard you on the break just now. You wanted to say Prince of Persia was better, and you couldn't bring it.
I started to say that. I really did, but
I agree with you. No, I can't be. I can't say that.
It's easily better. I'll step forward. It's
okay, Dingus. Yeah, let's hear you take that. So Prince of Persia is easily better than Robin Hood?
Yes.
Convince us.
Kidding? Well, for one thing, it doesn't have the load, as far as I'm concerned, the load of all of that mythology on it and the expectation that there's going to be all these great hijinks that are completely that the expectation never is panned out. And the other thing is it has a charismatic leading character that is that it is at least attractive and delivers some lines in an interesting way. And I think Robin Hood fails that.
Can I address those real quick?
Yeah, Russell is fatter than Jake.
That's what I meant to say.
Well, okay, I disagree, Dingus, about the expectation thing in that the Prince of Persia games have quite a history, and they evoke very specific kinds of things. Now, I never really expected those to necessarily be honored, but having played all the Prince of Persia games in the line of my work, there were a few things I was hoping to see that I didn't feel. Like, I did have some expectations, and specifically because the man credited with the story, and I think he also got a producer credit, is a very clever fellow named Jordan Mechner, who originally created the games, and who, if you look at a game called The Last Express, Jordan, and he's done some documentaries, I think, Jordan Mechner has some storytelling chops. And that is part of why I kind of had higher hopes for Prince of Persia. So you may not have had those expectations, Dingus, but I was disappointed because I was expecting, you know, those two things, the video game history and specifically Jordan Mechner's involvement.
Just because his name's on it doesn't mean he had as much influence as you're thinking. Right?
But he had a story credit, though. I think that's pretty big. I mean, the fact that he provides the kernel of the story before other scriptwriters butcher it.
But they can butcher anything. They can butcher Jordan Mechner. And I love Jordan Mechner. I love The Last Express. I think it's brilliant. I think that guy's a genius. I love the old Prince of Persia games.
But didn't that color your expectations, though? Like, I'm just disagreeing with Dingus.
No,
like,
Dingus is out of the trailers.
Oh, yeah, see, okay. I should have watched the trailers.
See, the trailers helped me.
Well, okay.
It gave me a pretty good sense.
Let me flip this one, then. Was it better or worse than the original Pirates of the Caribbean? And I'm not going to take that one, because you know what? Hold on, Kelly. I want Dingus to feel that one first.
Hmm. Oh, you mean the movie directed by Gore Vidal?
Nobody knows what you're talking about, except me.
I apologize.
So you're going with Disney adventure movies.
Yeah, like as far as a Bruckheimer produced, you know, they just take a name, they slap the name of something that a few people know onto a generic adventure story. So how do you feel, Dingus, it stacks up compared to the original Pirates of the Caribbean?
Well, wait a minute. Before I launch into this, okay. Of course you know what I'm going to call you out for.
Hmm. Whoa, I don't. I probably should have given this more thought, shouldn't I have?
Yes, you should have. If you're going to suddenly jump in and talk about expectations of an adaptation, what do you think?
No, I'm not talking about that. I agree that expectation thing with Jordan Mechner, that was my own baggage. That's just one reason that I think this was maybe it's not so easy for me to say this was worse or better than Robin Hood. It's certainly I don't think this is better than Robin Hood because I did have a kernel of hope that there could be something there that I felt wasn't there. So moving on from that question, I would be curious, after stacking it up to Robin Hood, how it stacks up to Pirates of the Caribbean. We can go back to the expectation thing, though, if you want.
Well, good Lord. Pirates of the Caribbean was such a – I mean, it just goes right through you and doesn't leave any residue. I don't even remember other than, you know, Johnny Depp was more amusing. And
yeah. Those movies are overrated, if you ask me.
I agree, but here's the thing, though. I didn't think there was anything in Prince of Persia that is nearly as memorable as, say, Johnny Depp just sort of showing up and screwing around. Like, there's nothing like that. I would say the original Pirates of the Caribbean was better because they had Johnny Depp doing something outrageous.
Right.
Nothing
and Jeffrey Rush is much better than Ben Kingsley.
Exactly. Yeah. That's Ben Kingsley. Ben Kingsley's eyeliner. That was the main villain here.
So if you're going to – you would have to have eyeliner versus eyeliner. That would be Ben Kingsley versus Johnny Depp, and that really – you can't – I don't think those can be paired against each other.
That would be – it would implode. Yeah, that would just be
what
like –
What about Keira Knightley versus Gemma Arterton?
Ah, now you're getting somewhere, Kelly Wand.
Orange Gemma Arterton.
did you like her?
I was upset. It was always her front view, every shot. It's like just one behind shot.
Her voice made me want to punch puppies. It was horrible.
What was wrong with her voice?
It was just grating. It was gratingly bad, and I thought she was terrible. And I couldn't even – I mean, afterward when I was talking to my my partner – I mean my wife about this, she hadn't seen the movie, and she's like, oh, she's really pretty. She's really pretty. How'd you like her? I didn't even
That's a trick question.
Plan.
That's a trap.
Well, I didn't have to get out of the trap.
Good.
She's horrible.
Yeah.
You passed the trap.
couldn't even remember what she had ever been good in, because I remember you last week, Kelly Wand, doing your rrrr about the fact that she was going to be in this movie, and what has she been good in?
Pretty much the throwaway
Quantum
farm in Quantum of Solace, where she's a redhead, and they keep her covering her in oil.
In a trench coat.
Yeah, yeah.
She's good at that. How dare you? I also liked when the invading army at the beginning of this movie, they barge into her chambers, and then the brother takes off the veil, and everyone sees her face, and they all go, rrrr. Do you remember that?
Everybody in my theater laughed when they took the veil.
Yeah, they did too, mine. And I wondered if that was intentional. Did they mean for us to laugh? Because it sounded so silly.
I don't think so.
But they didn't do it the second time when they go back in time and they take the veil off, because that's supposed to be the serious scene. So that time the continuum was different. They didn't go. Rrr.
Everybody in my theater was going, huh? What? They were too confused.
By the time travel stuff?
You know, by the other utterly incomprehensible ending. They just were sitting there like either they were asleep or they were completely confused.
I kind of got the ending. Did you feel it was incomprehensible? I mean, I thought it was a little sloppy the way it was shot. But that's another thing is the basic framework of the story, which I'm assuming Jordan Mechner came up with, I kind of thought worked.
I did not get the ending. I hate to jump to it like this, but there were things in this movie that I did really like, actually. But that feeling of and this is why, you know, I kind of asked you before you saw it if you knew if the story of this was related at all to the Sands and Time video game, which I have not played, although a very, very good friend of mine worked on it named Yuri Lowenthal. I haven't played it other than just to a few moments seeing it at Shoe Club. And so I wanted to know if you knew if the stories were related at all, because that moment where at the moment at the end, at the climax of the film, where he jumps back in time to this, to me, which seems like an arbitrary moment, why does it happen? It just all fell apart for me. It just feels so weird, and I hated it. I hated that ending.
Yeah, see, well, go ahead.
Why does that happen? Please explain to me why.
So here's the deal. I'm going to explain to you the mechanics.
They're in purgatory.
So John Locke is the smoke monster.
Stop it.
Okay. No, so here's the deal. The kernel of the story is based on, in Sands of Time, okay, let me back up a little.
I'm already zoning out.
The idea of the Prince of Persia games is that you're playing a little platformer and you're running around and you'll invariably die some grisly death and have to try a jump or to slide under a gate or something again. And you see the guy die over and over. That can get a little tedious in some games. So what they came up with in the original Sands of Forgotten Time or whatever game is this idea that you had a dagger that had a limited number of charges. And every charge you could use to back up time before you got killed in some grisly way and try the jump or the challenge or the battle or whatever over again. It
so
was
to
a game
to last save magic. To
exactly. It was a game. It was an in-game fiction for the fact that when you play a video game, you constantly have to reload saves. And instead, Jordan Mechner decided, hey, let's have this idea of a MacGuffin, a device, a weapon that rewinds time. And that way the player never has to back out of the game and reload it. And it was cool, and it worked. So here's the movie expression of that, is this dagger has a limited amount of sand. Each time you pop it off, you press the button, it rewinds time. They established that very well, and even for the people in the cheap seats, Jake Gyllenhaal very clearly explains it out. It's almost like reading a manual. Here's how it works. You get a minute of time, you know, it uses up the sand, you press the button, only the guy holding the dagger can see that it's happened. So that's like point A of introducing the dagger. Now, point B of introducing the dagger, what we find out is where do you get this sand? Is there's this mythology, which reminded me, by the way, of the movie Legion, which we saw, where the gods are going to destroy the world, and a pure of heart little girl convinces them, hey, you know, chill out, give the world a second chance. So they think, okay, we're going to. And they bottle up their sand that was going to destroy the world into an hourglass. So this sand is what powers the dagger. And there's an hourglass full of it underneath this city, which I was going to write the name down, Artuna or something like that, whatever.
It was called Baghdad, I believe.
So underneath the city where they couldn't find the WMDs was this hourglass of the gods, where all of the sand that represented the gods' wrath is contained. So naturally, when you press the button on the dagger, you've only got a minute of rewind time. But what if you were to plug the dagger into the hourglass of the gods and basically get unlimited sand?
Well, if you do that, you can you get an unlimited rewind for as long as you want, as far back as you want, because it's not limited to how much is held in the hilt. But a byproduct of letting it run too long, I presume, is that it lets the god's wrath out again and it destroys the world. So Ben Kingsley is going to rewind time to the point where he saved his brother. And he's going to not save his brother. He's going to do a Terminator or whatever. And then he's going to become the king. Right. But Jake Gyllenhaal interferes and basically lets up on the button right at the point where he discovered the dagger, which apparently is not enough to destroy the world. I mean, that was a convenient thing. If Ben Kingsley had rewound another 30 years, the world would be destroyed. But as it is, Jake Gyllenhaal lets the button up just in time where he's just found the dagger.
I have questions.
Sir, yes, the gentleman in the red shirt sitting in the back, yes.
Why did Ben Kingsley want to not save the king's life, which is what helped him attain all the power and respect and loyalty he had?
So he could be king.
He wanted to be king because he was the king's brother, and if the king had been killed, he would have become the king instead.
And he had to
and why
sure
did he
that...
save him in the first place?
He wasn't thinking. He was not a forward-thinking young
man. So he's an idiot. Okay. My other question is, what if you go back in time before your birth?
Then I got nothing. I don't know. Well, maybe we'll explore that in the sequel.
It's just if you can do that, why do you just want to be king of Persia? Like, you could be more than that even.
Well, it's all they knew back then. You know, they didn't discover the New World. Their maps were only so big they couldn't fit. You know.
Did Tom's breakdown help you, Dingus?
I understand all of those points, and I appreciate the breakdown because I could follow the movie point by point. What bothered me is that it was so convenient at the end that. You know, it's like watching the rewind on Netflix Instant View on your 360. You know, and now that Tom describes it, I can see all those images flowing through the hourglass of the gods. And Jake Gyllenhaal was just able to push play at just the right moment.
Right.
And the buffering wasn't a problem, and he was able to go right into that. And what I wasn't seeing is, why does he get zapped back to this particular moment? It just seemed far too convenient, and I thought it was just annoying. It just felt like
I thought it's because he took his thumb off the pommel right then, like he did it on purpose, like he took it off right by then.
Well, that's what Tom's saying, and that's what I just felt all too convenient for me, and at that point I was sort of riding along, and what you didn't address, Tom or Kelly, is that I kind of liked Jake Gyllenhaal in this, and I don't think either of you did.
No. Real quick, to clarify something, what you just said, this movie's like watching Jake Gyllenhaal play a video game. Because that's how I felt. Okay,
there were moments about that were amusing to me. Like early on when he's making the assault on the castle, the filmmaker does that cute thing where, you know, the camera shifts to show what the character has to do next in order to open the castle.
It should have just been a joystick. It should have been like a little joystick.
But for somebody like me, who has a very, and to use the word casual is to overstate, has a very casual understanding of games, to see that sort of he has to go here next, and then he has to go up here and knock this down to get this to open the gate, I found that amusing, and I giggled, and one other guy in my packed theater giggled. So two people were amused by this sort of... video game convention, and then the little boy who's the tutorial. I mean, those were amusing to me, but I guess you're right about it just being about watching Jake play a video game. But neither of you really even liked him at all.
No,
I didn't either.
I didn't think he says whoa a lot, and I didn't get his character at all. I didn't feel invested in him. I didn't give a shit if he lived. He never said anything funny.
There's no chemistry.
Never did anything surprising. Yeah. And also, I don't know there was like some issue, like Arabic people are mad because it's a white dude playing an Arab guy.
Well, they should be. I mean, it's all English accents.
Like Gemma Arterton can pass for anything, kind of, the way they had her. But like Jake Gyllenhaal looks about as Arab as you do, Dingus. Like he's blue-eyed and clean-cut.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I have been in the presence of people who have asked me, are you Persian? I actually had that asked to me. Of course, I was in Salt Lake City at the time. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, by Salt Lake City standards, you are Persian.
She was a Persian woman.
Is your Persian? She was hitting on you.
She was a seven. She was working at a 7-Eleven. She can't have been hitting on me. Stop that.
I don't know.
Anyway, there were a couple things I thought he did well, and you know, he got a couple of the little subtle goofy moments better than most actors would have. Like, there's this moment early on when he says to his brother, the angry brother, not the friendly brother. He says, "Your hand's still on your sword, or your hand's on your sword again," and he has a couple of throwaway lines like that. That really work. I mean, he's given a couple of really cheap ass lines, like "Watch your back" after he's like killed the guy on the wheel early on. He has a lot of crap to contend with, and I don't blame the chemistry with Jim Adderton on him. She's horrible in this, and they don't work together at all. But I think that he sells a couple of those more subtle, silly moments well. I mean, I think he does a fine job.
He does scream a lot.
I agree with that thing. Is he sells a couple of those silly moments, but that, to me, that means nothing to me. I mean, that's not – all you have to do is be reasonably attractive and fairly fluid with language, and you can sell that kind of stuff.
And his accent was all over the place.
His accent was terrible. I'm with Kelly Wand in that I didn't feel they really established his character at all. You know, it really did feel like, okay, he showed up and we're shooting this scene this day. Like, it just felt so unconnected to me, and there was no through line. I didn't really buy that he was doing any of the stunts. I mean, none of that.
I didn't buy that he was making any big decisions, like, through the movie, like, oh, I'm going to help her now.
But I do agree with you, Dingus. As an actor, Jake Gyllenhaal is very charming. He's a good-looking fella. But to me, that's just not enough. That just doesn't cut it. And I none of that really does anything for me when I'm watching a movie like this. I kind of want more, and maybe that's unfair. But I agree with you, Dingus. There were some cute little one-liners that he pulled off, and I smiled a little bit, so I will grant you that.
But when you're starting with the premise of which movie is better, this or Robin Hood, I think you have to...
That's how low the bar is.
Yeah. Well, that's the bar you start at.
Or a pile of shit thrown in your face, which is better.
All right, Dingus, I will say you have convinced me that I like this better than Robin Hood, so I'm fair enough.
Yeah, that's some achievement.
I will say this. The CG landscaping was far better in this. As far as, like, you know, let's do another shot that should be in Lord of the Rings, but with golden...
Nothing looked like it. There was no sense of place in this movie to me. And Robin Hood had a small-ass amount of it, which is more. So, you know what? Fuck it, I'm going with Robin Hood. Daring
okay.
people.
Fair enough.
And Robin Hood sucks, but... I at least thought I was watching a movie, but it was a bad movie, and in this I didn't even feel like I was watching a movie.
Kelly Wand, there's
nothing.
Your thing about sense of place, Kelly Wand, so Dingus, you mentioned those little, like, intro sequence, like the camera panning through the CG city early on, where you know he's got to go here, and there's that gate there, and he's got to get through this little murder hole the archers are shooting through. Like, I liked some of that stuff. And it, as set up, and I was like, okay, good. So now we're going to have a cool, lucid action scene where we see it broken down into little bits and pieces. But then it all got lost in the editing. So this sense of place that I feel like they establish and they don't follow through with was like constantly disappointing me. There was no payoff for, okay, we're going to show you something, and then we're going to have the character fight through it. We're going to show you something, and then we're going to have quick edits of him darting through these locations you'd briefly
see. Yeah. There were no visual surprises, ever. Like, nothing didn't look the way I was expecting. Like, oh, okay, there's a big core, and it looks like the dagger.
And even with
all the sand was the
same. And even with the stunts, you know, okay, now he's jumping across the little posts the horse
is
tied to. Okay, now he's going across the sticks. Okay, now he's going to jump across the roof, and the guard isn't going to make it. I mean, all of that was just strung together so poorly. And to me, that's a big part of sense of place, especially if you're basing it on this concept of, like, playing a video game. You know, there's a great video game called Assassin's Creed and Assassin's Creed 2 that I was constantly thinking of watching this, and it never... Playing Assassin's Creed 2 is far better than this movie, I would say.
Take that, Roger Ebert.
Well, I was thinking of, because I have so little experience with video games, is the different movies that it reminded me of, and that was... the obligatory parkour sequences that you see. And now that when you're talking about this, Tom, I'm hard-pressed to think of a single action sequence I remember, aside from the arrow dude or the knife-throwing dude with the spike-throwing dude in the chamber at the end.
Yeah.
I can't really think of anything that stands out. And so I'm thinking of the sort of the parkour, like running along the walls kind of stuff, and how in a movie I didn't really care for – The Bourne Ultimatum, I think that's the movie where Matt Damon has a extended rooftop running parkour kind of a thing going on, where even though I didn't care for that movie, it at least felt like it was integrated into, well, he has to do this. He has to run along these rooftops and run from balcony to balcony and crash through windows. He's forced to do this because of the situation. And I never felt that when I was watching this, when they're running along these logs that are sticking out of buildings or flying around.
Now, Mike Newell did one of the Harry Potter movies, didn't he?
At least one. Did he do one or two? Maybe he just did one. I can't remember.
Well, I haven't seen any of them, but it led me to hope that he would be able to string together, or at least put together, if not string together, is create some good action sequences. And maybe I don't know the Harry Potter movies enough, but that's another bit of baggage I came to this movie with. Is
I don't
this
like
idea
Harry
that,
Potter movies.
Is what? No. Is that Mike? This guy has done a big budget fantasy epic movie before. He came from Harry Potter, so therefore he's a good candidate for doing something like this. And I didn't see anything in this that suggested a director who really knows how to do a good action sequence with special effects. I saw none of that in Prince of Persia, really.
But he got to start doing movies that are far different.
Or Weddings and a Funeral, right.
Exactly. I don't know how he made the leap. But I can't remember seeing a single... And I've seen a few of the Harry Potter films, and I know I've seen the one or ones he did. Maybe it's just one, and I don't remember it making any impression on me.
Here's an action sequence that I'll bet you remember. Jake Gyllenhaal doing a backflip off of a sand avalanche. How about that?
Bruce Valanche,
yeah. What?
Not in this movie.
Thank you, dingus.
That's a word that they made, a sand avalanche. Isn't that how you would characterize that? It was a sand avalanche, yes?
Can you tell me what the hell you're talking about?
I honestly have no idea which scene you're talking about.
You don't remember? So
I remember that was an ostrich in every scene, and everything was sand.
Okay, so Gemma Arterton says, don't touch anywhere that I walk. Unless I walk there, don't come. So he catches the big rock, and then the little rock bounces off of it. And right. It all starts, and it creates a sand avalanche.
Sand avalanche, I get it.
I was thinking of like one of the big creatures they ride in Star Wars.
A Rancor?
No, Bantha. Not a Rancor. Yeah, Bantha.
Oh. I can't believe you didn't know that word, dingus. Bantha.
Well,
she didn't say don't catch rocks.
So, but that's it. Go ahead.
The pebble. What made the rock fall?
There is something, well, that would probably be the Tooth Fairy.
Don't do it, Tom.
I do have something I want to ask. This is sort of this is kind of a standard complaint of mine. And
it's hard not to do it, isn't it?
It's hard sometimes. That's what she said. I am curious about this, because this movie makes a number of ridiculous feints at... talking about politics or making political mini statements.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's of course Alfred Molina who does his I hate taxes, mm-hmm. which links. But then there's a number of weapons of mass destruction links as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself really getting annoyed. I get really annoyed when that type of thing is used in a facile manner, because I don't find that funny. I don't find it funny to make jokes about. I guess jokes aren't made about it. It's used as a plot device in this to say we didn't find the weapons. Where are the weapons? And there's a very obvious parallel being made here, or at least in a facile way. And I get pissed off about that. And as I was thinking about this, and this happens to me time and again. I would like to ask you fellows what you think about this. It doesn't bother me when Indiana Jones has a whole plot of several movies around the Nazis, which is when you're talking about enormity, you can't get more enormity than that. And why does that not bother me, but it bothers me here?
Because the Nazis was a black and white situation, some unique in warfare. Tom's dead silent.
No. I was gonna let you run with that. I have an answer. I'll jump in. So two things, Dingus. I don't know. This could be a low blow, and I don't intend it that way.
No, but go ahead.
Well, you and I, when the invasion of Iraq began, had very different perspectives on it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you can. And we don't anymore. We've come a long way. We've been through a lot together. I think we sort of more or less see eye to eye on what happened. But I love the fact that this idea of an unjust invasion for trumped up reasons is almost a trope now, that it's something that a fantasy bad guy do. And maybe, Dingus, like to you, you might feel a little bit more betrayed because of how you initially supported the invasion of Iraq. And again, I don't mean that to be a low blow. You've been jerked around by
mullet head.
Well, I just mean it sort of affected you in a different way than it did me in terms of, I think, the way you felt betrayed. I was against it from the beginning, so for me it's been sort of a through line. For you, Dingus, it might feel a little more personal. So for me it's easy to say, yes, that is a convenient motivation. Like, I love seeing the neocons being the bad guys in Mission Impossible 3. And I love now that we have a goofy fantasy movie where the villain's scheme is a trumped-up invasion based on bad intel. I love that. I love that it's such an accepted part of consciousness that you can put it in a dumb summer movie, and that people see it and they're like, "Oh yeah, that is something a bad guy would do." You know, that's.
But they always make it dumber though. Like it's the blue-eyed white dude learns a lesson and he gets to go back and do a do-over on it. So if you gotta take the allegory.
Well, what I love about it, though, is that it is just – it can be such a shorthand reference to evil and incompetence that it's widely accepted as that. Now, as for how facile it is about it, yeah, I agree. But it's – you know, it's a silly fantasy movie. I mean, everything in this movie is facile. But maybe Dingus, that's it, is that you can't kind of enjoy that as much as I do. And I don't know. I'm just grasping here. Because I personally was delighted at that part of it. I didn't think it was handled with much nuance, but I just thought it was very funny that this was the villain's scheme, basically, is we're going to have an unjust invasion, and we're even going to have lines about so-called evidence. I mean, that at one point was actually said, so-called evidence, and this idea that this one spy, you know, that all the credit was given to this one spy that Ben Kingsley put forth. And you think of like Ahmed Shalabi with the situation with Iraq, and you know, they even say at one point a great man would have stopped this attack, you know, implying
right. And now let's have a I'm going to get a gift, and I'm going to give your queen away to my son. But
right.
You should have stopped it. Yeah, that was great.
So I was really tickled at that bit of silliness. And I agree, it was silly and it was facile, and I did not mind in the least because I love the idea that. That this is widely accepted now as something that an incompetent bad guy would do.
So the princess is George W. but one of the Bush twins.
That is actually interesting to sort of think of, you know, because I hadn't thought about that. If maybe it's just because there is a sense of, and this is something I'm happy to sort of hold forth on now, is that I do have a sense of shame about how I was snookered in about that and really, really bought into it and had to come around and actually learn and admit that I was completely wrong. And I'm ashamed of that. And I wonder if that is part of it, although I don't know that I'm going to completely buy into that because because later on they talk about there's this other sequence where I think Ben Kingsley is talking to the brother and he's talking about avoiding a trial and a rule of law, which is very much a link to the way we hold prisoners and to Gitmo and to the whole idea of military tribunals and how we process prisoners and whether or not we torture them. This whole avoid a trial, rule of law, And it glosses over those things too. And these are things that are very, very important to me as far as how I feel politically.
But it's a fantasy video game movie.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then when I think about that, you know, I think about how the Nazis are treated in the Indiana Jones movies. And there's a couple of things that are parallel as far as the Indiana Jones movies are concerned in this and why it doesn't work. I'm interested in sort of delving into what you're talking about, Tom. I'm not sure I buy into it, though, especially with how we all reacted to how these issues were dealt with in Green Zone, which is not its flight of fancy.
Exactly. So my main problem with it, Dingus, and I wonder if you agree with this, would you have minded if this was done in a better movie, like in a better fantasy movie, a fantasy movie that had convincing characters, good sequences? Like, would it have bothered you just as much? Because what bothers me about it is that the movie was crappy and no one's going to see it. You know, for instance, I would have loved if Avatar had tackled something like that rather than a convenient, you know, colonialism is evil kind of
thing. Oh, it's WMDs. Thanks, James Cameron.
But would it have made a difference, Dingus, if it had been a better movie? Would that have made it a little easier to swallow? Or?
You know, it probably would have, because it probably wouldn't have been one of the long pieces of grass that crops up. Because this reminds me of my complaint about Children in Danger movies and how I rail against that until it comes to a movie that I like Orphan or Joshua, or I could go on and on about movies that have children in danger but are done well, and I don't find that offensive. And I don't think that I actually find the weapons of mass destruction thing in this offensive per se. It's just that it crops up for me, and I think, really, is that what you're going to do?
Well, that was your reaction, and my reaction was sort of a little gleeful clap.
And then
disappointment. You can see me doing a little gleeful clap.
And well, then
disappointment
that
nothing came of it.
I like your explanation is that now this has entered the lexicon as shorthand for ineptitude,
yeah.
And we can use it that way now, and I like that. I like that you
They sold us the war, and now they're selling us how dumb the war was. Like, now they're making us pay twice.
But it was dumb. Where do you disagree?
Yeah, but I don't. It just seems obvious. I don't know. I mean, the Nazis were a period piece villain. And Raiders of the Lost Ark, and so they were, like, doing a Saturday morning serial.
Kelly Wand, are you saying it's too soon?
Does Dingus get worried when Charlie Brown's endangered by Lucy in the football?
No, but when Snoopy is the Red Baron, I get pretty offended.
What did you guys think of the special covert ops Nazguls?
What were they called?
They were called the Hansons. The Hansons.
The Hansons. I wonder where those guys
are.
And did you notice that was Ray Liotta as their leader? Ray Liotta with a snake up his sleeve.
Oh, whatever you want to call it.
Those are the most disappointing Nazguls I've ever seen, by the way.
They're supposed to be special forces dudes, right? Is that what they were?
Alfred Molina actually wrote this, calls them secret government covert activity. Well, I guess I'm the one that came up with special ops. But yeah, they're supposed to be like the like Ben Kingsley's like Delta Force or whatever, I think. And you know what? Just as a visual idea, I love the idea that they're these mystical desert assassins, and you can see they have a little dust dervish with them wherever they go. Like that could have been a cool visual if they weren't so stupid.
How come in 300 the Persians are all black and evil, and in this they're all white and good?
That, Kelly Wand, is a pretty good question that will...
That's the difference between comic books and video games.
Aha!
Racial alignment.
Can somebody tell me the last thing Alfred Molina was good in, please?
An Education. I mean, Spider-Man. I mean...
You guys didn't like him in An Education?
I didn't. I thought he was way over.
Coffee and Cigarettes, the Jim Jarmusch thing, his little bit with Steve Coogan.
You know, that's what I came up with when I was looking through. That's the only thing I came up with.
Right.
Has there been anything since then where he's been good? I mean, I have this residual memory of thinking, Alfred Molina, he's good. I really like him. But he showed up in this, and I...
Raiders Lost Ark.
And then he's holding forth about ostriches and whatnot.
I like the ostriches, too, by the way. I just want to say.
I loved them. I would like the movie to be about ostriches. Ostriches of time.
They didn't have anything to do with anything.
That's what I liked about them. Like, who put ostriches in this movie? Whoever it was, well done.
Bravo. And then she's a serving girl, and she serves on the racetrack, and then throws a drink at someone's face, and goes, that's great. Like, they would have whipped her, wouldn't they?
No, because they weren't actually mean, see? They were just selling. That was their reputation. They were doing PR.
Oh.
They were lovable bandits. They were scallywags. Did we what, Dingus?
I was going to ask if you guys knew that ostriches have suicidal tendencies. Did you know that?
That's what I hear. If you follow the science.
And?
Dingus, wasn't there a line about ostriches and Sideways? Or were those llamas?
Oh, no, it had to be ostriches. I think he just says they're mean.
And it's because he's had to run, Thomas Hayden Church has to run naked to a field of ostriches in Sideways. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely right.
Okay. happen. That's just what I thought of when I saw the ostriches here.
There's some in Dude, Where's My Car?
Good. Good to know. That's our 3x3. What great ostrich movies. what was the deal with the... Wasn't there supposed to be a demon covered in spikes?
You know, yeah, they say that it's guarded by a demon covered in spikes. And one of the things I like is that demon doesn't show up, but it's the guy who shoots spikes.
So that was one of the Hansons. Because I thought they were setting us up for a cool boss battle, like a monster. And it was just another one of the Hanson guys throwing spikes. That's what that was?
I think so, because, you know, the a knife thrower with a conscience? I think his name was Sesso, maybe. Have I told you about the Inbaka? He goes up there to fight, to battle this, and it turns out to be one of those dudes. And it sort of had the sense for me of the game of telephone, of how this sort of filters down, you know? It's a guy who throws spikes, and eventually somebody thinks, oh, it's a demon covered in spikes.
Because I was bitterly disappointed. I thought we were going to get more, like, supernatural stuff. I thought he was going to fight, like, skeletons and zombies and monsters.
Or his own doppelganger.
Doppelganger, exactly. That's classic Prince of Persia stuff.
Yeah, because they were doing some shadow graphics early in the movie, and I'm like, oh, they're leading up to doppelganger.
Oh, you know what? There were a couple of shots of people like running when people were running along the rooftops of shadows on walls, which I
liked.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing real. Is there anything that's supernatural? I mean, there's the Medea robe, but that's not even.
There's the dagger, and there's the boobs.
the Nazgul are supernatural, aren't they?
The Hashashin's supernatural because they look weird.
They're throwing Molotov, like magical Molotov cocktails, and they have snake familiars, and what else are they? What are their other powers? Kick up tornadoes.
I kind of felt like they could just be super duper special forces guys. You know that all of this is in there. That all those things they throw, that could all be chemical. This could all be technology.
Well, right? Except those dust dervishes, then.
Nothing in Prince of Persia can't be explained by science.
Because they're moving so fast, but I can't explain the snakes, so never mind.
They could just be trained snakes.
Why did it have to be snakes?
I thought they were CG snakes. I'm tired of these, Mike Newell didn't like working with the ostriches, and he said they were dim. It's his word, and that they would only run on a straight track.
So. All right. Give ostriches a bad rap there. Way to go.
He's mad at birds for being birds, basically.
What do you call... Go ahead, Dingus.
Man, these ants really don't... They're not following my marks at all. It's great, dude.
What do you call that overused technique where... You go, like, you show Jake Gyllenhaal jumping down, and then you quickly, like, do it in slow-mo, and you show it in slow-mo for a minute, and then you let it speed up to normal time. What do you call that overused technique?
Ostrich time?
But you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, they did all of that kind of thing, where somebody would jump, and then the camera would, like, go, it would go, like, the film would go slow-mo, and then it would go back to normal speed.
Well, that's what his heartbeat's doing, like Sherlock Holmes.
You mean bullet time?
Because it's not bullet time unless the camera's technically, like, moving. And I don't think that was necessarily part of it. I'm sure there's some term for it, but they got a lot of mileage out of that. You know, because they're cutting together really short sequences. And so it's like every now and then they have to, you know, stop it and put it in slow-mo so we can actually see what the heck is going on. The editing in this was just terrible.
Why would they slow-mo him, though? Like, he's not CG.
So the audience could see and appreciate. I don't know.
His acting? His athleticism?
His athleticism. There you go. Yeah.
He was pretty cut.
All right.
And hairy. Huh, guys?
Did you guys have anything that was enjoyable that your audience might have said?
My audience was pretty bored.
My guys were dead silent. I felt bad for them. Yeah. And I tried to lead an applause at the end, and everyone just kind of looked at me like, what?
It didn't take, huh?
That's not funny.
Your audience dug it, Dingus?
No. They giggled at inappropriate moments, which I think is a good sign for a movie like this. There might have been a smattering of applause at the end, led by Kelly Wan, perhaps. Mm-hmm. The quote I really liked from my audience came at the end as I was leaving and following a couple guys who had bothered to stay through the end of the credits, which I always do, even though Samuel Jackson did not show up at the end. I was pretty disappointed in that. And one of the guys turned to the other and he said, the original was just a side scroller. Yeah.
Nice.
That made me pretty happy.
So who of the side characters was most memorable? So Alfred Molina was the comic relief, right? Which was your favorite brother?
The one who died.
Tass, yeah.
Yeah, what were their names? Good Lord. So Dustin was the lead character's name.
That's Dan. Stop it.
It was like, totally Dustin, but with all the accents. Dustin spoken in about a half dozen different accents.
Yeah.
So Dustin, and what one guy's name was Tass? What?
Yeah, Tass. Prince Tass.
It's a terrible name. And her name was Tamina.
Tamina, yeah.
Okay.
No worries.
What was Ben Kingsley's name?
Navid, or Navin.
Okay, Navin. All right, fine. And how was Ben Kingsley as a villain? What did you guys feel about that? Better or worse than Ben Kingsley in Sound of Thunder?
What?
Worse than Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast. Mm. Worse than... Isn't he always the surprise villain, though? Like, wasn't he the villain in... I don't know, I'm thinking of F3.
Well, it's kind of one of those spoilers by casting. At first, I was like, oh, they're not going to make him a bad guy. He's actually going to be a good guy. That's cool. But, yeah, they couldn't... No,
but when you see him opposite the king, you're just like, King, you're not long for this world. Sorry, bud. You're opposite Ben Kingsley. You're about to die.
That's true, because we don't know who that actor is. Yeah, exactly. Right.
I didn't know it was going to be by a Madea robe, but, you know...
Why are you calling it a Madea robe?
That's straight out of Madea.
She poisons a robe?
It's not... Yeah, I mean, that's one of the deaths is by... It's kind of like by this golden robe that gets put around the wife of Jason's new wife. And she burns up.
Okay.
Unless
so
I'm
he
completely
burned,
crazy, which is
if
possible.
Ben Kingsley burns his hands, how come the other people who handled the robe don't burn their hands? And why don't you just take the robe off?
Because it's magic. That I actually thought, that's another point, too, where I thought, oh, we're going to see cool magic stuff. You know, this is going to be like a magic robe that eats him. Like, I was almost thinking
he's
like...
He's a wizard.
Yeah, like there's some kind of wizardry going on, or it's going to be some kind of Clash of the Titans thing where Ralph Fiennes comes flying out with a bunch of bats or something. Like, I thought we were going to get stuff like that. And no, right. It was just regular old poison, which was pretty disappointing.
I thought it was going to be, like, that was his thing, was he could make clothes burn, so he's going to make... Jake Gyllenhaal's, like, loincloth burn.
You really wanted to see Jake Gyllenhaal naked, Kelly Wand.
My superpower is making clothes burn. That would be awesome. My favorite brother was Tass. The actor is this guy named Richard Coyle, who I knew I'd seen somewhere before. And it turns out he was in this horrible... that everybody thinks is good, except for me, I guess, this horrible British sitcom called Coupling. And he's just, I just remember his face. And then when I looked it up, I vaguely remembered him sort of, it's just a goofy sitcom, a trifle. But that's the only thing I can think that I remembered him from. But I liked him. I mean, he had an honest face. Seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah.
It's like a good melon.
What was your favorite banter between Gemma Arterton and Jake Gyllenhaal? So here's the problem. Here's the problem I had. Dingus, you and I, the night before, had seen North by Northwest, which has some very nice banter between Cary Grant and Eva Marie Saint, even when it's not well written. You know, the line, I'm a big girl, and when he says, yeah, in all the right places, that's a terrible line. That's horrible. That's bad writing. But Cary Grant and Eva Marie Saint, they can sell that. What was some good banter in this movie? Because we had just come from North by Northwest the night before, and then we have to go through and listen to this. So, what were some of your favorite exchanges?
Well, this is the problem when the movie
it's an awesome double feature, by the way.
When the movie moves into the Indy Jones and Karen Allen and Marion, Indy and Marion sequence, it just tanks. Because there's just nothing there, and she's horrible.
What's the Indian Marion sequence?
It's, you know, they jump out the window, and she says, you know, after they've had this contentious moment, they jump out the window into the pool, and she says, I can get you out of here.
You're my GD partner? Is it like that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's like you're my goddamn partner. And but it has
right.
there's none of that amazing history. First of all, those two have a history together. And there's no chemistry whatsoever. And so they just end up out in the desert sort of doing a little slapstick thing. And I don't know if I can think of a moment. Is there anything?
I loved, just because I was like, what the heck is going on here? The scene where they first meet each other, they're making these weird eyes at each other, and she's looking at the dagger, which is protruding from the front of his pants, and
yeah.
He's got his like weird goggle eye things going, and she's like, and I'm like, what? And it's just like close-ups of weird facial reactions that don't seem to make any sense. I just loved how awkward that was, and what a harbinger that was for what we were going to be in for in terms of their relationship.
He says, get down, it's a Persian patrol, and when they're in the desert. So that's pretty exciting. That's great.
And there's lots of just sort of insert generic bicker here, you know, or maybe they were ad-libbing for all you know.
Right. Without the right sand, it's just another knife is an ad-lib, I think.
Yeah, she gets dehydrated at one point, and he goes, oh, you princesses and your need for water.
See, that's wacky. That's wacky.
Yeah.
You know, there is actually another link between this and North by Northwest.
All right, go. What?
There's knife throwing.
Huh.
And between this and Big Trouble in Little China, the knife throwing, exactly. Yeah. All right.
There's also some time travel.
And
wait, never mind.
I'm just going to do this.
1, 2, 3, not only you and me, got 180 degrees, and I'm caught in between. Counting 1, 2, 3, be the partner free, getting down with 3 feet, everybody loves
open. Before we do this week's 3x3, I just want to float this, see what you guys think of this. So I saw a trailer for Avatar, The Last Airbender. Thing is, I hope this drives you crazy as much as it drives me crazy. One of the characters in this trailer for Avatar, The Last Airbender says, there are reasons each of us are born. You have a problem with that, Kelly Wand?
What's it say?
There are reasons each of us are born.
Multiple reasons? I thought it was just because the drugstore was closed.
That's good.
Booyah!
No, it's grammatically incorrect.
Each of us are.
There are reasons each of us is born. And I'm like, okay, you're gonna get M. Night Shyamalan and a huge budget and all this CG stuff, and you're not gonna have somebody check the grammar in your freaking script. I don't know. That's just
probably by the guy who did the Apocalypto poster.
You know, but yeah, I can briefly accept that you know it's sloppy, but it's a convention. That whole no one can what is it? Dingus, no one can deny can shape their destiny. What's the tagline for Apocalypto, Dingus?
It is whatever. I don't know what.
No one can escape their destiny. Right.
Right.
Escape his or her destiny. But
that's nails on the chalkboard.
But
why can't it just be his? Because it's him.
Right. Because it's sexist. But it's common. I mean, I think at this point that battle has been lost. That you can substitute a plural pronoun for what should be a singular pronoun to avoid the sticky issue of his or her. But there are reasons each of us are born. That's just flat out wrong. Have someone grammar check your script. I will do it. I will do it for, you know, at $10 an hour. So I'm just putting that out there.
Two things, Tom. Did you
yes.
almost say sticky wicket just then?
I think I was fumbling towards that idiom. I didn't quite make it, as you noticed.
All right.
Okay.
And is the M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie called Avatar, The Last Airbender, or just The Last Airbender? Do you know?
Oh, I don't know. I was assuming, because it used to be Avatar.
The
video game is called Avatar, but I guess they took that out, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was a video game. I thought it was just an animated series.
Also,
I know it is a video game, but it's from an animated series, yeah.
All right.
It's the other controversial white man in the main role.
Who's the little kid in that? That was fascinating to me, is seeing that little kid like jumping around doing – it made me think of Kick-Ass, seeing that little kid jump around doing martial arts, even though it was all very CG. I was like, wow, do I maybe want to see this? I don't know.
He reminds me of somebody, but somebody much older. And now I can't think of – because I was looking
at – why Jaden Smith?
He struck me as a six-year-old version of Vincent D'Onofrio. That's what I was thinking.
I saw him as the Persis Combata.
Ah, very good, Kelly Wand. That's a nice reference. Well put. This 3x3 I hate because I had several great ones in mind, and then I examined them more closely and realized they didn't fit my stupid 3x3. So,
this know, week, screw the guy who came up with this.
I know. This 3x3 is we're each going to tell you about three movie romances in which the characters never even kiss.
Forever. I kept looking at movies and going, this is it. And then they would kiss.
Yeah, yeah, same here. And we'll talk about the ones we were hoping to get on the list. But let's first go with the ones that we actually have on the list. So, Kelly Wand, you're going to be introducing next week's 3x3 later. So start us off. What's your number three movie romance in which the characters never kiss?
My list sucks. And I think it's a cool topic, but I just totally bombed.
It's a tough one. It's something that you have to like really
like
be tracking closely for a long time. It's not something that you can just come up with quickly. So, what's your number three, Kelly? What do you got? What'd you come up with?
I'm just going to say it.
Okay.
if you talk Ali to him, do not mention Omar.
Wait, is that the title?
No, that's another Persian proverb. I got confused. I was on the wrong one. Okay, my number three is... a little film from 1984. I'll do a line of dialogue. I don't know any dialogue from it. It's called Christine.
Called what?
Christine.
Christine? Ah, so you're wait, is there actually a movie romance in there? You're talking about Keith Gordon never actually kisses that car.
Right. Well, she doesn't kiss him either. But they do have sex. So
Keith Gordon does not have sex with Christine in the car.
Oh.
Does he?
He has sex with the car inside Alexandra Paul while Kelly Preston's in the library.
I don't even know what you're...
That's my number three. Thank you.
Kelly Wand, I want to ask you a question.
Colonel Mustard.
Kelly Wand, what's better, Christine or the car?
It's apples and oranges.
Really? Okay. Because I love the car. I'm a huge the
car. I think the car's better.
Okay.
I'm partial to Christine. But Christine doesn't have, not much happens in it. It's kind of slow.
Did Keith Gordon direct Christine himself, by the way?
No, John Carpenter did.
Oh, wow. Okay, good. I didn't know that.
Christine's got its moments, but there's something about it that sucks. So okay. Put your finger on it.
Because I don't think there's really anything about the car that sucks. I mean, the stuff that's bad about the car, I even like. I like the stuff that's bad.
Yeah. Well, and it's and the car does stuff. And it's got, it meets its match, you know.
Yep. All right.
Spoiler alert.
All right, so Christine, go ahead.
What's the tagline for the car, Tom?
The car is not in love, though, with its owner. Which
there's no romance there. It's just when you mentioned. Yeah, so the
Christine's
tagline...
kind of like King Kong. Love dooms. It was beauty that kills the ugliness in this case.
The tagline for the car is, what evil drives the car? Which you can, by creative placement of, say, commas, make sound as if it means something completely different. Dingus, give us an example.
Exactly.
So the tagline is, what evil drives the car? Dingus, how would you put that?
What? Evil drives the car?
Okay. So Dingus, is that your number three, the car? Because I hate to tell you this, James Brolin and that terrible actress kiss in the car.
Oh, crap.
I know.
Right. What evil drives? The car.
Good. Exactly.
What evil drives? Yeah.
Good. What evil drives? Car.
What evil drives the car?
Okay, so who's doing next week's 3x3?
Dingus, what's your number three? Did you have a hard time with this? So you had a hard time too.
I had a really hard time, and I was so excited when you first came out with it, and then I kept just bombing. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up with a fairly pedestrian
The listeners will come up with the cool ones and cover our slack.
Yeah, we hope. Exactly.
Well, I toyed with like going off the rails and doing some machines and animals and whatnot. Not actually doing them. That sounded gross.
Just spoiled my number one, but all right, go on.
I apologize. All right, number three. I think I'll give you guys a quote. What do you think about that? Are you shy about your book?
Oh, dadgummit. So why do you... That's my number one, you jerk. You know what, Dingus? We're just going to do... let's just put our lists together at this point.
No, don't do that. Come on. You'll get to take one of mine next.
Okay, you might be right.
How's that?
Why is that not your number one is what I want to know. Why is Remains of the Day not your number one?
Because
because my number one means more to me than this one does. But I love this movie, and it's a fantastic example of a romance.
That, no, I just remember, I now realize, Dingus, what your number one is. I'm not going to say anything, but I think I know what your number one is, and that one hadn't even occurred to me, and that's a good one. All right, I know at least one where we're not going to. So go ahead, talk about Remains of the Day. Go ahead and scoop me.
I'm happy to share talking about this with you. And this is, and I say this almost every week, this is another example of me just being so happy and tickled by this 3x3 thing that we do, because I got to watch all of Remains of the Day again this week, and it's a breathtaking movie, and I've seen it a few times, but it's been quite a few years since I've watched the whole thing. And when I first saw it, it didn't make as big an impact on me the first time I saw it. It's 1993. And I think that I didn't really understand so many things about it. And one of the things I didn't see as much as I see clearly now is that so much of what the person controlling the conversation in this movie is talking about is not what the actual conversation is about. Mm-hmm. And they are just beautiful performances. And watching what Anthony Hopkins is going through and what he wants and not allowing himself to have. I mean, there's that scene that the line I just said comes from, which you referenced before, Tom, I think in another 3x3, but I don't remember which one. It's great, but there's a scene I didn't really remember as much where he's talking to Hugh Grant, and Hugh Grant is reminding him of what the American, played by Christopher Reeve, who I totally forgot was in this movie, has talked about how Lord Darlington is a rank amateur in front of all these people. And you see something going on in Anthony Hopkins' face, and you see he's just listening to a completely other conversation, and it's just great. And the mist kisses in this movie drive you crazy. And one of the things that developed for me during this week is that I started to hope people wouldn't kiss, which is the opposite of what happens when you normally watch these movies. Because I wanted to build a freaking list. And so there were a couple of moments in this, they're not going to kiss, are they? And she was in another movie.
Don't kiss.
And that I thought that – I didn't realize that this happened in Henry V, which was what I thought was going to end up on my list, but they end up kissing in that.
Yeah.
In a beautiful scene. But anyway, what do you want to say about it, Tom?
Well, no, just that. I mean, it's to me the epitome of this idea that you can have an intense, not outwardly passionate, but passionately felt love between two characters that is never expressed and – just this the painfulness of watching that never come to fruition, and this idea of missed opportunities, because I think it's something that, I don't know if it's just folks at our age, but I think it's just something that is part of the human condition, this concept of what opportunities you've missed, you know, what things are and how that can haunt you. I mean, it's for me what drives part of why I love Virgin Suicides, the Sofia Coppola movie, and that same thing pervades Remains of the Day. You know, what will your missed opportunities do to you over the course of the rest of your life? And it's just it's those two performances are so fantastic. Yeah, so I love that. And the thing is, I didn't think of this until late. I was driving home last night. I was talking with someone who was in the car with me, and we were talking about movies about like repressed British and Chinese folk and how certain cultures don't express that very well. And I was like, well, of course, Remains of the Day. I mean, that's the movie that basically suggests this list. So it's my number one pick, because I just can't think of anything that more poignantly gets at what this list is about, at how painful it is to miss the opportunity to actually have a romance lead to a kiss. So that was my number one pick. So we'll be skipping me for the number one.
I always hated that movie because the title is ungrammatical and it should be Remnants of the Day.
That is so incorrect, Kelly Wand.
What was Dingus going to say?
I was going to say, I wish we could watch this movie and just discuss it for an entire podcast, because there are so many questions I have about the way his character acts and the way she reacts and things that go on in the movie, that I could talk about this movie for a long time. I really
again, getting the opportunity to force myself to watch movies like this again, which you don't often think, I've got a couple hours, what am I going to watch right now? I think I'll watch Remains of the Day. It's not something that generally happens. You use like half an hour to watch a sitcom, and then maybe for me, I'll play an hour of Rock Band, or I'll just check Quarter to Three, or check my email, and I don't think about putting together 2 hours, and I'm going to watch Remains of the Day. But this type of thing forces me to do that, and I would love the opportunity to get a couple of people to watch this movie again and talk about it. And this happens week to week thanks to this thing we do.
Yeah. Well, you should maybe get picked for this movie club thing that they have.
I haven't heard about that.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you a link to it.
Thanks.
Kelly, so have you not seen Remains of the Day?
Hey, why isn't it just called Night?
They originally were going to call it Zapped, actually.
Grammatically correct.
So my number
is... Yeah,
I've
seen it. Oh,
yeah?
It's
okay.
Good. I like it. I like the scene where she finds him reading the romance. That's pretty hardcore.
And that's the reason...
The whole movie is just about the torture of being British, I think. Which is something I think we can all relate to.
I don't think so. I mean, it's written by it's from a Japanese novelist, you know.
Well, they're on an island in Japan. And
they drink tea, exactly, yeah.
Right.
All right, my number three is a movie called The Visitor. which is about Richard Jenkins befriends a young Syrian fellow who ends up being arrested and put in detention. And in the third act of the movie, a relationship unfolds between Richard Jenkins and a fantastic actress named, I'm going to butcher this, I think it's Hiyam Abbas. She's a Palestinian woman who is so distractingly beautiful. It's almost like, but she's so good, and the two of them are so good together. And they open up and they confess things to each other, and they get very close. They cook. He takes her to see Phantom of the Opera. It's clearly a romance. They even sleep together in this movie, but they don't kiss. And the sleep together is not sex. It's just literally sleeping together. I don't want to. Well, I've already pretty much spoiled the third act of the movie if you haven't seen it. But that's my number three as a fantastic romance between two well realized characters. They express so well also how much obvious attraction there is for each other, and nothing ever comes of it. And it's part of what makes the final shot of The Visitor so powerful. Was that
that's my number two. That's my number two, you jerk.
Well, turnabout's fair play. Suck it.
How could
and I already know what your number one is now, so I'm going to go ahead and fill in the rest of your list right now, Dingus.
Go ahead. Wow, you guys are boring. You have the same list.
We do, don't we?
I knew that going. This is the first one that appealed that occurred to me.
Yeah.
Because I had considered a list similar to this in sort of my brainstorming of possible 3x3 topics. And that moment when he just envelops her in his arms.
Yeah.
I can't. That moment is such a powerful moment because it breaches so many things, and yet it's so powerfully comforting. It's just beautiful, and this is like for me the reason for this list.
Yep, and it's the one that I had. There are a few more that I had in mind that I ended up looking at more closely, and they kiss. This is the only one that I originally thought of that actually made it to the list. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, he actually does kiss her.
What?
Yeah. Oh, that's in the deleted scenes. Never mind.
Are you lying?
No, I'm not lying.
What do you mean he kisses her?
I'm kidding.
Oh, you jerk. Okay. Because I don't own The Visitor. I would have rewatched it. I've only seen it once, by the way, too. So, all right.
Well, it's on Instant Watch, so you should jump on that.
All right. You guys finish the list. I'm going to go watch The Visitor.
Kelly
Wand, what's your number?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, Kelly Wand, you... It's because you watch Zap once a week.
I don't see movies that start with the and then it's only one other word.
Yeah, you saw The Car, hello.
And The Objective. But other than that, I don't, none. And The Island. Cool, Michael Caine.
Which, by the way, is not on DVD. I was very disappointed to discuss.
Oh.
I know. I really want to see that. You got me all psyched to see it and The Island.
This universe sucks.
It really does. Let's go to an alternate timeline.
Oh, you mean a purgatory?
Gotcha.
What's your number two, Kelly Wand?
I'll give you the tagline of the movie.
Awesome.
I'm sure you'll get it from that. And if you do, I'll give you a dollar.
Whoa, okay. Does that go for Dingus too, or just me?
No.
Okay.
Dingus will get it too easily without it.
Here's my chance.
Without even hearing the tag. Like, he already knows what it is. So
all right.
That would be fun. An earthquake is about to hit L.A. It's called Detective Rita Rizzoli.
What? What? So, Detective Rita, great tech, no, oh, I know this. Charlie's Angels 2.
Oh.
I don't know, what? Detective Rita Rizzoli, is it a Laverne and Shirley spinoff?
Wait, who's Laverne and Shirley? Jennifer Garner and Jessica Biel? Sure about that?
No.
For real?
Are you serious?
Yeah. There's talks about it.
Okay.
Sounds like an awful decision. but getting back to this awful decision, this was a small 1987 action movie called Fatal Beauty, starring Whoopi Goldberg and Sam Elliott as mismatched cops.
Wow.
They didn't kiss because the studio thought it was racist, or they were disturbed by the interracial love story, so they don't kiss in it.
But did they actually have, like, affection for each other?
Yeah. They had a kissing scene, but it got deleted because the studio didn't like...
Wow. Wow, okay.
Black kissing a white man. Or maybe it was just those two in particular. Like Beyonce and Thomas Jane, that would have been okay.
Tell you what, that's a very socially conscientious pick. Very, very well done. Okay.
That's not my actual number two. It's,
Stop
no,
it.
That's, nice. All right.
Dingus, we know your number two, The Visitor. So that comes, so now we go to me. My number two.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really want to pick this one, but I was just hard-pressed to come up with something. And I think in this category, there's got to be something better. But here's what I came up with. My number two is The Professional with, what the heck is his name? Natalie Portman and Jean Reno. Yeah. And of course, she's a little too young to be kissing, so that's part of what's going on. But it's clearly
is.
Like she is. Natalie Portman is, I think, 8 in this movie. And it's you
she's
know.
Got the body of a 10-year-old.
No, stop it.
Deleting that as well. So that's my number two. They never kiss, but it's clearly a romance. And I think he even, and I know this from reading the Wikipedia summary, he does confess to her that he loves her before dying. So that's
City Lost Children was another weird romance, kind of with the two young a girl movie, wasn't it? Wasn't there some romance between her and the guy in that?
I don't remember City of Lost Children that well. You know what? I remember seeing it and being a little lost and not really getting it. So, but that.
And you were an adult, so that part didn't work for you either. And you were in a small town, so the city part didn't work.
And I'm not French.
Right.
So I didn't understand what they were saying.
Small town of found adults.
Why wasn't it just called Lost Children City? Ugh. So ungrammatical.
Now, you're giving me grief, but you know that...
No, I...
That, where is it? There are reasons each of us are born. Is that not like nails on a chalkboard?
No, I actually... You know what? I totally agree with you. Okay. I'm just being a chimp.
That's fine. You're a good chimp. You're good at that. And
it bugs me more than it bugs you. It's like nails on a chalkboard every time I see stuff like that. I even get annoyed that I've lived through an era when different from became different than. Like, that even irritates me. And it's totally widely used now.
Because we're all writers here. I mean, we all like writing things, and we care about how well it's done. And, yeah, so.
We're snoots. That was DFW's name for it.
Snoots?
Yeah.
Department of Foreign War? Wait, DFW, what?
Oh, dear.
Dallas-Fort Worth
Airport? You Philistines obviously don't read David Foster Wallace or anyone ever. Cause he's...
I'm a Philistine.
No, you're not. You like good movies and books and things.
Infinite Jest is a minor Wallace.
Well done.
Major. Anyway, whose turn is it?
All right, so Kelly Wand, it's your turn. We're breezing through these because there's only like 5 movies that qualify.
Yeah.
So my number two is the
I think if you guys, if there's ever a repeat, like if two people have the same one, that should somehow be a loss. There should be some competitive
angle. No, but you know, once we talk about ones where I want to talk about the ones where I discovered that they actually did kiss, but I didn't remember that they kissed. We'll get to that. But what's your number one, Kelly Wand?
I will do a famous line from this movie, and you will guess what it is.
Okay.
And applaud my efforts for having said the line and picking it.
I look forward.
Here's the line. Beaufort may not receive invitations anymore, but it's clear he maintains a certain position.
Royal Tenenbaums?
Oh, God. Philistines. Dingus is deceptively quiet.
Do you know it, Dingus?
Fletch.
Fletch Lives is the only real Fletch, A. And B, the movie is Age of Innocence.
Martin Scorsese?
Yeah, they don't kiss because it's Victorian. Oh, wait, they do kiss on the actual picture of the movie. All right, let me redo my number one. I thought they didn't kiss, though, because there was the whole thing with the wrist. I didn't actually, you know. All right, my number one is Microcosmos, this documentary about bugs, all about the snails kiss. All right, that's my number one. Thank you. 1, 2, 3.
All right. I got you down for Age of Innocence. I'm sorry.
What were you saying about a loss, Kelly Wand, earlier?
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a loss, too. We all lost. Who wins?
That's a bingo.
Now, Dingus,
someone told me that they don't kiss at the end of Casablanca. There's no kissing in that movie.
Oh, they kiss totally.
That's what I said. I go, there's no way there's no kissing in Casablanca.
They don't kiss at the end, obviously, because they're in front of his husband.
His husband?
His husband, the French officer. That's his husband.
I also had his runner-ups.
Wait, hold that thought. Hold that thought. You might scoop one of us. Actually, you guys know my number one is Remains of the Day, but Dingus has got one coming up. The Dingus just so I'm pretty sure I know what it is. Isn't it a similar situation to The Professional, but with the genders reversed?
No.
What?
A similar situation to The Professional.
Like, the Professional's an older dude, a younger woman. This is an older woman, a younger man, right?
Oh, I was very close on that, actually.
Because they don't kiss in Rushmore.
Yes, they do.
Wait a minute. He gets to kiss Olivia Williams in that movie?
He forces it on her, actually. Yeah, he kisses her.
Oh, okay. All right.
In her classroom. And actually, I didn't even think you were mentioning that when you were talking about an older woman and a younger boy.
Well, then I don't know what your number one... Oh, wait, I do know what your number one is, you jerk. Oh, man, I wish I'd thought of this one then.
What do you think I'm talking about now?
Birth?
No, but I thought about Birth, too, and I didn't get a chance to look at it to see if there's actually a kiss.
Well, of course,
Birthday
no.
Girl.
There's definitely no kiss in Birth.
Yeah, I don't think there is, but Birth is not it either. Then we just came up with two things that would have helped us.
Shark Tale.
I don't know what yours is then, Dingus.
Mine is unfortunately one I've used before, but I couldn't help it. This is my favorite example of a non-kiss in a movie.
You're not. It's not what we talked about last week, is it? It's not the movie we saw last week. Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
But I did love that. I did love how that worked in that movie. This movie is...
Hi, listeners. I'm going to talk about stuff, you know, really cryptically, not tell you what's going on. Okay, anyway, continue. Yeah, that thing we did last week. Oh, yeah, that. Hey, that's great. Yeah, that was good. We'll talk about it after the podcast. No, let's keep talking about it.
Well, now, before Dingus does his number one, this is kind of weird because it's kind of a spoiler, isn't it? Like, every one of these movies we've kind of spoiled, except maybe Christine. I don't think in Christine you ever figure he's going to kiss the car. But haven't we been...
You know what? I think in Age of Innocence, he only kisses her in his fantasy, so I think I'm less stupid than I first thought I was. I think the picture's a trick, and I'm cool. Right. Suck it. Back to Dingus.
Yeah, you're right, Tom. It is. And I don't know how to get around that, to be honest.
Well, I think in 3x3, we have resigned ourselves to the fact that we are willing, you know, for the sake of having far-ranging movie conversations, we're sometimes going to be spoiling movies, and we apologize in advance. But
and we don't care.
We can't do anything about it because we don't know what movies you have and haven't seen.
Only true movie buffs will even be listening to this gibberish, and they'll have seen everything already, too, in which case, why are they listening? But
that's not always the case, and I am sensitive to this because, you know, we've talked about movies that a couple people have complained about. And now that we have which I really like, a thread devoted to the 3x3. There's our picks are listed right up front, and given the topic, as you said, Tom, the topic itself, just the titles, they don't even have to listen to this, just the titles
right.
are a spoiler, and there's no way around that. I mean, how do you put a spoiler alert before somebody clicks on your thread?
And so what we were dancing around is that the Messenger is a great pick for this list. I think just because we all talked about it to kick off the 3x3, none of us picked it. But
Yeah. Too obvious.
Right.
See, in my subconscious, I go, oh, if someone else has it, it's not as good. It's a loss.
No, you're right. You're right, Kelly Wanda. Yeah.
So I go against what I think you guys will do.
Well, I just have avoided picking anything we've done as an actual movie.
Wait, what's Dingus's number one?
Yeah, so, okay, Dingus, so that said, what's your number one?
Okay, the quote is, ah, brilliant, fair play, that's great.
Snatch.
It's not Snatch. It's the film Once, from 2006.
They kiss in that.
No, they don't.
They do.
No, they didn't.
It's an imaginary kiss, but they kiss.
They kiss on the poster, but then they jump off the poster and say, we didn't mean that.
They don't kiss in Once. I guess not. I guess you're right.
It's gorgeous. It's just.
But it's not a romance. They're just coworkers.
Stop it. They're coworkers. They're not even coworkers.
Colleagues.
Yeah. He hoovers her all the time. There's a key scene when they're taking a break from recording a demo at 4 a.m. and it's just a beautiful scene where he gets her to play a song she's written for him. The characters are guy and girl, played by Glenn Hansard and Marketa Irglova. I don't know how to say her name, so forgive me.
Racist.
And she plays this song that she's written for him after sort of being embarrassed about doing it. And then she sort of breaks down about it. And, yeah, this is my favorite example of that. And I'm not going to say anything more about it. Cause I think
that's a good one, Dingus. All right, rats. But I'm pretty sure they kiss.
Okay. There is a moment where he does a platonic kiss on the cheek goodbye, but I decided not to count.
Right. No, okay, that's fair.
What? I don't know. I call gray area on that.
Okay, Mr. Age of Innocence.
Yeah, yeah.
No, the fantasy kiss is different from... If he kisses her on the cheek in a fantasy, it's totally different.
It doesn't cover... It's not in the spirit
dream
of...
Dream sequence Asia. Kisses are allowed.
Now, what about if you kiss someone and then turn back time to before you've kissed that person? Like in Prince of Persia. Would that be eligible?
Or what if you kiss somebody and then the director edits that out because he later changed the entire scope of the movie?
Or what if you kiss somebody and then fly really fast around the world counterclockwise to make it spin backwards and bring Margot Kidder back to life? Yeah.
What if it's an Eskimo kiss?
So here's a couple that the two that I actually wanted to put on here, upon doing further research, one involving watching the movie, the other involving reading the Wikipedia page, I discovered there actually
were
one of them. I was going to do Jackie Brown with Robert Forster and Pam Grier.
Oh, that's good.
But they kiss it. I was reading the Wikipedia entry, and the Wikipedia entry even says, and then after a kiss, they part.
See, this is the flip side of us, quote, spoiling movies, is we're wrong so often.
Exactly.
That the listeners have a 50-50 chance of being
surprised. Well, everything's 50-50, basically.
But right. I was totally thinking when I floated the list, it would be The Visitor, Jackie Brown, and here's going to be my number one, which I rewatched. And I'm loving it, and it's great. And then it gets to the end, and Michelle Yeoh leans in and kisses Chow Yun-fat before he breathes his last breath and dies. And I did not remember that in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, they actually kiss.
Mm.
Oh, that was so annoying.
Well, a kiss after death doesn't count.
But it was before death. He was still, I was like, okay, I can still get away with this on the list. No, he's still moving. Rats.
Well, he has to kiss back or it doesn't count.
He does. He kisses back. He puts his hands around the back of her head, and I think there's even another line.
Their hearts have to be in it or it doesn't count.
It was a kiss before dying.
It's very good. Yeah, exactly. But, oh, I so wanted to do, because the scene where they're having, like, tea earlier on, and, I mean, there's just these heartbreaking scenes between the two of them where they're not expressing You know, it's like Remains of the Day. It's all subtext, and they're just both such great actors, and it's just they're so good. And the ending of that is just so heart-wrenching too. You know, when he confesses that he's wasted all of his life because he's in love with her. Oh, that's just amazing stuff. And in a way, I was kind of glad for them. You know, he does get in a final kiss before he dies. But I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, rats, you were going to be number one on my list.
If you kiss someone deadly, it doesn't count for the list.
Kiss Me Deadly is good.
There's no kissing in that one, is there?
I'm pretty sure he makes out with various...
He doesn't kiss the box.
No, the box kisses her, though.
In Russia, the box kisses you.
All right, so what did you guys have that didn't make the list?
I had Wally, although I think they make out.
That's a
Quest for Fire. Lars and the Real Girl. I don't think he kisses her.
Ah, oh. those are good, Kelly Wand. Mm. They're actually all good. All right.
See, then those are my new number three.
Dingus, what fell off your list?
I'm going to do a Dagger of Time and redo my list.
How are you going to prove it?
It's
been recorded. This will be the perfect opportunity to prove the Dagger of Time.
A hasty man pisses twice. It's an old saying.
I believe the end version said that.
Dingus, what fell off your list? Anything?
I think the only thing I'm willing to admit that fell off my list is Lost in Translation.
Oh, that's a good one. I think he kisses her, though, when they...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a kiss there, too, isn't there?
Fell off my list.
Okay, right. Why, there's some that fell off your list that you're not willing to admit?
Yeah.
There's some even dumber than that, because that's pretty dumb.
Star Wars is one.
That's a good one. That's actually a good one. They don't kiss in it.
Surprisingly.
In fact, yeah, Lucas didn't think to include it.
For a minute, I thought you guys were being serious, but I know now. I know better. All right.
What? No, they don't kiss in that.
Please.
They take some two movies.
Oh, like the original Star... No, well, they kiss in the original Star Wars, right? He kisses it before they go across the little chasm on his Batarang thing.
You remember that, but that's not what actually
happened. That's not a romance. Oh, wait. For the purposes of the list...
Is that
No, she does kiss him. He's right.
Right.
Tom beat us at Star Wars. Damn it.
Tom's
a big Star Wars nerd.
She gives him a good luck kiss, but originally there was a huge... They were macking out, so totally just going at it.
But because Lucas knew that down the road he was going to reveal that they were brother and sister, he had him pull back? Is that what you're saying?
He didn't know that, but he figured that out later on, and then he ended
You can kiss your brother for luck. You can even French kiss your brother for luck.
Wait, let me write this down. Hold on. That's my new tagline.
Kelly Wan, what is our 3x3 for next week?
If you talk Ollie to him, don't mention Omar. Wait, I did that one.
You did.
Okay, 3x3, they're all the same.
Anybody who skipped the movie.
Okay, so yeah, ready? Tom's excited, I think, right now.
I can't wait. I can't wait to hear what you've come up with.
Okay, it ties in with the movie we saw this week, which
All right.
is always unusual.
So 3x3, inspired by Prince of Persia,
Sands of Time. Two ofs, one title, one colon, two movies, one love story, one 3x3.
One to
Here
one.
Here we go. Okay, as we know, they're making a WoW movie, which...
why don't you tell everyone what WoW is?
It's World of Warcraft. It's a game Tom likes for some reason. He's always grinding for Rep and Timbermaw, whatever I call it.
His hobbit is always fishing.
Yeah. Tom once mocked me for saying Tom Bombadil at a press event.
That's right, I did, and I can't believe it.
And then you became the biggest Star Wars...
No, Tolkien.
Right, Tolkien, same thing.
That's right, I grieved you personally for a while about that, didn't I?
Yeah, and then you became gayer than anyone for Lord of the Rings Online.
That's true.
And you have, like, multiple 50 millionth level guys. Oh, you got to help me in the library at Elrond's.
And that's one thing I love about Lord of the Rings Online. It has Tom Bombadil, who isn't in the movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, did you call him Tom Bombadil, Kelly?
Kelly brought up Tom Bombadil in something about, it was one, I think it was the original Battle for Middle Earth. It was a Sierra precedent? No, that would have been EA. But didn't you say something, Kelly Wand, about, I forget the context, but you, I forget
it
what.
It was some Lord of the Rings thing.
Yeah.
It was an RTS. Oh, who cares? No one listening could possibly have this life.
Okay. But you did pipe up with some question at a press event about Tom Bombadil, and I was like, oh, Kelly Wand, you're such a loser. I made
yeah.
fun of you for that. I mean, affectionately, of course.
Well, the joke was on you, wasn't it?
It really was, yeah. 10 years later.
Yeah.
Kelly Wand, so I can assure you that this story is about the only thing people will care about on this podcast.
That's sadly probably true. Okay, so they're making a WoW movie, a World of Warcraft movie, or we hear that they are. Mm-hmm. It's been, like, I think 3 or 4 years since they announced it, or two, somewhere in there, 2, 3, or 4. And Sam Raimi is committed to it, but said he doesn't have a script yet. Anyway, so the list is 3 games you'd rather see a movie based on.
Okay, that's grammatically incorrect.
Than the ones that have been made and ones in production.
All I can say to that is there are reasons each of us were born. So
it's like Doom, Super Mario Brothers, Prince of Persia. These are the movies made from games.
3 games you'd rather see a movie based on, and this will be okay, this will be our 3x3 next week.
Yeah.
Dingus is going to just do Rock Band 1, Rock Band 2, and Rock Band 3.
I got a lot of games to play this week.
I could do 1,600 jokes right now, but then I need them for the list. So.
And next week, so what opens next week? What are the bullets we're dodging because we're seeing Splice? Does anyone know for sure? I looked at, The Killers.
The Killers.
Killers.
Oh, Killers, okay, with Anton Kutchner.
Tom's favorite action star and wrestler.
And there were a couple of other bad ones. So I'm kind of psyched to see Splice. I think Splice, even if it's bad,
explain why you're psyched.
Because it's from the director of Cube.
I thought it was called The Cube.
I don't think so. You don't see movies with the and then one word.
That's true. And I have seen Cube, Ergo.
Ergo, right. Ergo, Hawk, Propter, Hawk, Ad.
So the guy used to make it, he made a movie with 4 letters in the title, and now he's more mature, and he's making a 5-letter title.
Exactly.
Can't wait for his 6-letter title.
That's 6. Yeah. Splice is 6 letters.
It's a trilogy.
P-L-I-S. Yeah, that's 6 letters. So we'll see Splice, and we will be back with a 3x3, 3 games you'd rather see the movie based on. you can parse that as we will. Thank you for joining us. If you missed our Prince of Persia talk, rewind to that. Go back to that.
It's way better than this crap.
I am Tom Chick. I have been joined with Christian Marowski, I think. Christian Marowski.
That's very close, Tom. It's Marowski. You're getting there, buddy. Christian Marowski.
I'll get that next week. And also Kelly Wand.
When water flows uphill, frogs sing Abu Atta.
Super magic, black origin, punch me out of dopeness, step me out of dopeness, get another open, knock off this death, Brooklyn, we keep on moving.
The heavens expand, the stars advance, in the Boogeyman.
Mojo hand, healing power like bangs, snap, I refute these bitches, we know the truth, you can't confuse me, bitches, great name greater than all your riches.
A bungler blows into Sorna's bell.